Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Analyze Your Trade, episode number 176 for October 19th, 2021. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of TimingResearch.com, and today we will be discussing your trade ideas, and we are recording this at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. So today I have arranged for Jake Wojastik of TrendSpider.com to join us. And Jake's been on a bunch of our other events, but hasn't been on AYT yet. So happy to have him here with us. And the Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com is back to moderate. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, great. And great to have you back, Jake. So we can talk a little bit about all the different stocks that are handed in. And basically, before we get started, if we could get a little background, Jake, on yourself and what are you doing at the company over there?
Yeah. So thank you for having me. So my job, I'm one of the founding team members, but really focus on evangelizing the product, focusing on thought leadership and new ways to use some of the different proprietary features that we have on the platform, and a lot of partner relationships. So I like to do a lot of these types of presentations to go over what's unique about the platform. And sometimes it's as simple as just going over some individual names like we're going to do today and point out maybe some things that people wouldn't necessarily think about because they may not have some of the tools that TrendSpider has. So, my job is really just to be a thought leader within the platform and provide some different perspectives in the market that some people may have not really thought about before. So I'm excited to do that with some of these individual names that we have coming up.
Okay, great. Now we had a big week so far and it's only Tuesday. And we want to get a little background on what's going on with the major indexes. Let's start with the S&P. Closed pretty much right on the high here today, another 30 points on top of yesterday's move. So, and on top of last week's move. So what are you thinking here on the S&P?
Yeah, I think we're just kind of in a classic kind of thrust reversal here. You've got just straight up days the last three out of 4 days. And so for me, what I generally like to do is look back and see, okay, has this happened before? And, you know, where exactly are we in the pattern? So some things that you'll see here, if we go back to really November of 2020, these types of moves where you gap up multiple days in a row generally aren't followed by just all of these gaps filling immediately. And a lot of people look at gaps and they think that gaps have to fill just absolutely, you know, 2-3 days after they've occurred. And that's not the case. And sometimes gaps really don't ever fill. I mean, look at these gaps from November of 2020. These gaps never filled or have not filled yet. You know, maybe one day they will. But so that's the main thing I'm looking at. I'm looking at, you know, when have we gapped up like this many days in a row, and what happened after that? And so you can see here back in November of 2020, we had the same thing in April of 2021. And now we're kind of having that same type of thing here in October. And one thing you can do if you didn't want to go and look through all of the different gaps, you can just turn on the gap snake. So the gap snake is an indicator on the platform that will automatically detect gaps in price. And so you can see here the gap detector caught some of these. And sometimes if you have a wick and then you gap above right at that wick, it won't highlight as a gap. So in this case, you can't really see a couple other of these gaps. In this case, same thing. But, you know, I look at a gap as anything that actually gaps above the previous close. So, this gives you a rough idea of where some of those gaps are. And then, what I'm doing is I'm just looking, okay, well, the last time we did this in 2020, sure, we consolidated maybe for a week or two, but we had multiple gap ups and then just continued to melt up higher. Same thing in April of 2021 after the March correction, or, you know, the March pullback, if you want to call it that. We had the same thing, just multiple days gapping up, and then we just kind of continued to melt up from there. So I'm thinking that's going to be the same thing here. Historically speaking, this is a pretty strong time of the year. So if you go the seasonality on the platform, you'll see here that—
Hey Jake, one last thing before you go to the next thing. Another thing to note is that the two times you're referencing, March of 2020 and April, it broke to new highs. So maybe the key also is this 45-50 area. And if that does not hold, then the comparison to those two timeframes might make a whole lot of sense, because you can see once in those two timeframes, once you went to new highs, it was on the horse there for a while. And that may be the case if we get above 45-50, which is really the only number to hang your hat on if you're looking for any resistant at this point.
Yep. Great point. And you can see some of the times that we were gapping up, you know, it did take a few more days for us to get to those previous highs. So, you know, kind of to my point, I don't think we're even done melting up or kind of thrusting to the upside. All we need is one more day and we'll be at all time highs. So tomorrow is definitely an interesting day to see if we can break those highs. And then going into the seasonality side of things, November is a very strong time of the year since the financial crisis of 2008, 2009. So pretty much looking back since the bottom of that crisis, November has a 92% win rate. So that means that 92% of the time, November closes higher than October. So you've got a lot of things aligning here. You've got seasonality. If you look at the weekly chart, you'll see here that we're really kind of right on this longer term ascending wedge here. So if we anchor the volume by price from the COVID low, which is essentially looking at where has volume aggregated since the COVID lows, you'll see that we're really just starting to bounce off of this area of volume. So this is what I like to call a volume shelf. It's just an aggregation of multiple volume nodes as a function of price. And you'll see here that there's quite a base for price here. And we've got quite a bit of blue skies above if we do get above that previous high. And that would put us, you know, in the 470s, 480s, maybe by the end of the year. And so not only do you have this nice bounce off support, but you also have the seasonality going into the end of the year, which is relatively strong as well. And that's across the board. This is SPY, but you can also look at the Qs and you'll see the same thing. I mean, you've got the this huge just volume shelf here. Now, it's not the point of control. The point of control is way down here at 315, which is essentially just your largest volume node. And so for those that aren't familiar with the point of control or the volume by price, you're essentially taking what you do on the bottom of the chart, looking at volume as a function of time. So, you know, how does volume look for each week and how much volume occurred each week? You're looking at how much volume has occurred at each price increment since, in this case, the COVID lows. And so you'll see here that there's just this massive volume shelf here, a ton of shares holding, which creates a base for price. As soon as you get that demand curve shift, you can really get some very strong moves here. That's exactly what's happening this week. And, you know, last week, sure, we had a strong week, but we really didn't even break the last week of September's high. So this is when we're finally starting to actually make some meaningful moves. The last 2 weeks have been just kind of bottoming candles. And then this is kind of showing that this is likely not a dead cap bounce. We'll have to see. But the way that I look at the market is really looking at volume weighted average price. So if you look at the volume weighted average price from the highs, you know, we're way above them at this point. And you'll see here that if this was truly a dead cap bounce, I wouldn't expect the price to actually get above this volume weighted average price. And that just hasn't been the case over the last few days. So, you know, the Qs going into November, not as high as September, the SPY, but you still have a 75% win rate for November since the 2009 lows before the market really started its just huge move up over the last 11 years. And then you look at the IWM side of things, which is really kind of your risk on, risk off measurement here. And if you look at the monthly chart, this is one reason why it's been really hard for me to get too bearish in September and early October, even though the markets were looking a little rough. You know, you've got this previous resistance line that goes all the way back to July of 2000, and you broke out of it in February of 2021. And all we've been doing the last 8 to 9 months or more have been consolidating here. And you kind of have this flag forming right at this previous resistance now acting as support. So if the market was really looking that weak, you wouldn't really see IWM, which is generally looked at as a risk on, risk off type of indice. You know, you would see this maybe looking a little rougher. So if we really break above this flag resistance, I think this could really set a new tone for the market for some new highs on IWM across the board. And so November also has a 92% win rate. So that means that 92% of the time November is closed higher than October. You can see December has a 75% win rate. So the last 2 months of the year for IWM are the strongest months of the year. So this is something that's really nice because a lot of people, you know, don't have the ability to quickly look at seasonality or how has a particular month of the year performed over the last X amount of years. And the seasonality tool really allows you to do that. So main thing I'm looking for on IWM is to break out of this flag. And if it does, I think that's kind of a green light for pretty much the broad markets across the board. And Bitcoin, I mean, Bitcoin has been, you know, showing no signs of any type of bear case there. And that was another reason why it was really hard to be too bearish bearish on the broad market side of things, because Bitcoin's a great indicator of risk in the market as well, and kind of a risk on, risk off asset. And you can see here that we're just nearing all-time highs here on Bitcoin. And you know, if Bitcoin continues to move up, we could easily test this 1.618 extension above, which if Bitcoin does move up another, you know, 30% or so, I can't see the broad markets not following that as well. So the main thing is to get above this previous high. We don't have anything to the left of the chart. So a lot of people say, well, look left if you want to look for different levels of resistance or support. Well, there are none here. We're pretty much getting into uncharted territory. So that's why you want to use the Fibonacci extensions from this most relevant measured move, which was April to July. So if we can break above this high, I'm thinking, you know, 85 to 90,000 is probably a possibility going into the end of the year. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. But if Bitcoin does continue to move up, I think the markets will follow that lead.
With regards to that Russell, it's been in kind of a like that window there. Would you measure a breakout above, say, 227 and measure it up? And maybe can you give a target where you think it could go if it really got going? Because that's a long time to be consolidating. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's a different, you know, people will measure the move differently. So some people would maybe take this previous breakout here and then measure the move here. And so if you did that for this breakout, you know, that would put us in the 300s. Yeah. Now, if you were simply just using a fib extension, it really depends on where you would use the measured move from. I would probably measure the move from this point here to this point here. And that 1.618 extension would be right around 248, 249.
Yeah, and that's pretty reasonable if there's a stampede, because like I say, these earnings are blowing the cover off the ball, and mm-hmm. they are looking at a holiday season where people are just going to spend their brains out. And yep. That is a very powerful backdrop going in. And you got the seasonality, as you said, where people do a lot of business at the end of the year. And there is a ton of sideline money who never trusted the thing that might start coming in. So you've got a perfect storm here to get some pretty good volatility in the next 10 weeks, 8 weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to use Twitter as a sentiment indicator, you know, just seeing what people are talking about. And there's still a lot of people that are bearish and think this whole mm-hmm. thing is just, you know, just a dead cap bounce. And, you know, maybe it was a dead cap bounce before we got above some of those previous the all-time high anchored volume weighted average price. But, you know, at this point, at least for the Qs and SPY, it's kind of past that. Now, IWM is the only thing that I can compare it to is pretty much a barcode over the last 10 months. It's literally done nothing. So you can't really compare IWM to the Qs and SPY looking at that all-time high anchored VWAP because we didn't really have it until since June. And the volume weighted average price from June is way down here at 221. So if anything, you know, the volume weighted average price from the highs in June have really been a line of best fit at best. Whereas the SPY and the Qs have a little more kind of uniformity with their look. Now, the thing is, we've got this symmetrical triangle on IWM. We really need to break above this area to get things going. And, you know, and until that happens, it will have to be a little cautious. But that's why I really don't like to look at even the daily chart sometimes, because if you zoom out, that's what's giving you the bigger picture here. And that's kind of what's showing the bull case here. And, and you know, the 10 months doesn't really make a difference when you look back 20 years.
What about the transportations on IYT? That really got nailed. You know, FedEx went down from what, 300 and change down to the low 200s. And, mm-hmm. You know, same bottlenecks and stuff, you know, when they get sorted out, you know, these guys, you know, the stuff has to get around some way, right?
Yeah, exactly. And same thing here. I mean, if you look at the volume by price, looking at volume as a function of price since the COVID lows, you know, you'll see there's a lot of volume aggregating here. And a lot of people, and just to go back to IWM real quick to kind of explain why I'm generally anchoring from the COVID lows at this point, because if we measure volume from the start of this very broad symmetrical triangle, we already know that most of the volume has taken place within this price range because it's such a narrow range. We want to measure the volume since the range of this move has been at its low to its high to see, okay, is there a lot of volume aggregating here over the last X amount of years? Because we already know most of the volume is going to be located here if we're just looking at the start of this pattern. So that's why I'm always anchoring from these COVID lows at this point, because that's the most relevant kind of reset point that the market's had over the last 2 years. So if we do measure the volume by price from this low, you'll see there's a lot of volume aggregating here. Now, the month isn't over yet. It's only the 19th. So we do have time left in the month, but we're getting close to the end of the month. And I'm a big believer in looking at candles before they fully close, because sure, it can change, but you still have to have an idea of what it looks like before the actual close occurs. So in this case, you've got the seasonality at also 92% for November. So a very strong month ahead coming, historically speaking. If you just use some basic trend lines here and we connect this point to this point, we're essentially about to break out here on this downward sloping resistance. So there's just a lot of things that are kind of aligning here for, as you said, kind of a perfect storm of just almost a very, very strong move to the upside into the coming months.
Yeah, and it's nice to buy some things that are not on their all-time high, you know what I mean, with some of your money. And the thing is if you look at FedEx and UPS, they do look like they may have seen the bottom of their pullback. If this transportation average is going to go, you would imagine they're going to be part of it, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, oh my gosh, yeah, this thing has been destroyed. And You'll see here, you know, if we measure the volume from the high here, the volume has only been trading, the price has only been trading at this level for about 4 weeks. And look at how much volume's already been aggregating at this level over 4 weeks. You know, we're measuring this as a function of about 4 months or so from this point, or 5 months. And so you can see, since this bottomed out, there's a lot of shares starting to aggregate down here. And this is what I like to call kind of a basic volume shelf. It's just a lot of shares holding down here, which is going to create a base for the price. And a lot of the time, the price can bounce here at first, simply because, you know, everybody's sold who's going to sell and your supply dries up. And then as soon as you get a little bit of an uptick here and break of these highs, that's when the demand side kind of comes in, and you can get some pretty strong moves here pretty quickly. So yeah, FedEx, UPS, I mean, they're all probably looking pretty similar. I guess UPS has already made the move, which makes FedEx maybe a laggard play. But same thing here, you can see there's a ton of volume aggregating at this area, and you don't have a lot of liquidity above. You kind of got this, it's not a price gap, but it's a volume gap where you just don't have a lot of liquidity up here.
And like the price can move
like an air pocket, like a vacuum. And you can see the prices can move very quickly through these areas. And these types of moves on UPS and FedEx are going to help the market continue to go higher and higher, because it's almost like, you know, it's almost like handing off a baton. You know, as a stock hits all-time highs and pulls back a couple percent, that capital then flows into these laggard names, and that just keeps moving the market higher and higher over time. So, like you said, kind of a perfect storm. 83% win rate since November. So you can see kind of a theme here. Very strong month coming for November, historically speaking.
With regards to the S&P, I just was going to ask you a real quick question if you put that chart back up. Sure. Would you say that at this point in time that we are either looking at a runaway, a breakaway runaway and an exhaustion gap that may be problematic for for a pullback, or this thing has so much lift to it, it takes out 4550. So if we take out 4550, you know, obviously the breakaway, runaway stuff is all off the table. But if we started to falter, do you think someone could say we have a breakaway, runaway, and exhaustion now if we don't get, like, say, above 4550, 4540 here in the short run?
Yeah, and, you know, that definitely. And the thing would be, if we did pull back, honestly, it would be healthy. It would actually be probably a stronger case for me. But just kind of looking at these previous times we gapped up and you kind of have this runaway gap, I'm thinking we get more of this type of move where we just continue to melt up for maybe 3-4 weeks at this point.
That seems like a probability. Yeah,
but I mean, if you look at the weekly chart too, I mean, that's a really strong weekly candle, and it's only Tuesday, so we have to, you know, think about that it's only Tuesday and a lot can happen. But that is what I mentioned with the Qs, you know, the last 2 weeks have this, sure, it seems like the market's gone up a bunch, but it kind of just was playing catch up with the other 2 weeks of us doing nothing. So this is really the first week that we're actually breaking out. And you can see that here, if I just kind of highlight this horizontal level, you know, we're just finally starting to break out of almost a month of pretty much doing nothing except chopping around. So, you know, some people would say this breakout's just getting started.
Yeah. And earnings is just getting started. So there's your gasoline, right?
Yep. Exactly. So, you know, on top of that, with Bitcoin just being so powerful right now. And it's so weird to compare Bitcoin to compare Bitcoin with the markets, but it's just become such an integral part of the market. You know, I think anytime you see Bitcoin moving like this and about to hit new all-time highs, the market's definitely going to follow. And so that's a little bit of gasoline on the fire as well. And that seasonality, you know, it's really hard to deny the seasonal, the trends in the market over time.
Yeah. Well, let's start hitting this list a little bit. The first one is TECL. It's 3x bullish. So this is obviously the one to be in the last 2 weeks. But I'm not that familiar with these 3x anything. So
yeah. So for me, you know, if I'm going to chart anything that's 3x, I'm generally going to look at, you know, the underlying. So, you know, for this, I would be looking more at just the Qs and then comparing and seeing, okay, the Qs look really strong. So the 3x is going to be even stronger. So for me, I generally don't do TA on the actual leveraged ETF. I'll do ETF on the spot price of what it's being derived from and then kind of get an idea of, all right, well, you know, this looks really bullish. So the 3x leveraged ETF is going to be even more bullish. And same thing, you need to hit these previous highs right around 70 on TECL in order for this to keep going. But, you know, you'd see this almost an identical chart pattern on the Qs if you were to pull those up.
Next one up is IDXX. It's a veterinary software and veterinary diagnostic things. And obviously, everything to do with pets has really been going nuts. And this one looks similar, huh?
Yeah. I mean, wow. This thing's, I've never heard of this name. I think I've heard of the ticker before, but never really paid too much attention to it. So if I was going to look at the daily chart, you know, the main thing that I'm always looking at immediately is just to look at, you know, what's going on since a previous high. So in this case, this is kind of your swing high from September 23rd. And you can see the volume weighted average price from this reversal point, we are above it. And then the other thing that I'd look at is what was going on within this wick. You know, a lot of people look at a wick and they immediately think sellers came in and pushed the price down. Or the other way to look at a wick is simply just looking at it and saying, okay, well, maybe there were just some really aggressive buyers that pushed the price up intraday and those buyers stepped away and supply and demand were able to pretty much get back at an equilibrium at a lower price. So the way that you can look at that and see, okay, what's going on is by turning on the raindrop chart, which is essentially a volume weighted chart on TrendSpider. It's very proprietary to our platform. And you've got two layers here. You've got one of the layers is the volume profile for the candle. So instead of going into a lower time frame like a 2 minute or a 5 minute chart to see where that volume came in throughout the day, you can see that, you know, this is the top is the high of the day, the bottom is the low of the day, just like any other candle. But you can see the left bar and your right bar, instead of that being your open and your close like a traditional bar, a bar chart, this is actually your volume weighted average price for the first half of the day on the left. Then this is your volume weighted average price for the second half of the day on the right. And then the squiggly lines here on the left and the right are actually the volume profile. So you don't have to go into those shorter term timeframes. You can see where that volume aggregated across the candle by simply just pulling up the daily raindrop. And this would be not a candle I want to see for a couple of reasons. One, you have a discrepancy between the high and the raindrop color and the candle color. So in this case, I look at hollow candles. If you were to look at a regular candle, this would show up as a red candle because anytime you're looking at a regular candle, the color is a function of the open and the close. So since the close was lower than the open, this is red. Now, the reason I don't like using regular candles is it makes this candle look like it was actually a down day, but it actually closed higher than yesterday. So I like to use the hollow candles just because it's a lot quicker to, you know, get a view on what's going on. This is a solid candle, but it's gray. It's gray because we closed higher than yesterday's close, but it's a solid candle here because our close is lower than the open. So this to me is technically still a green day. But then if you turn on the raindrop, it is red. So that's a little bit of a divergence, if you want to call it that. If I were to look at this, you know, I'd look at something like this to be pretty healthy, kind of a pullback to the anchored VWAP, and then something like this where you kind of continue up higher from there. But, if we zoomed out a little bit on the monthly, a decent candle forming saying for now, we got about a week and a half left for October. But if we closed something like this at the end of the month, I would look at that as a pretty strong candle into November.
Okay,
I would note that the seasonality is not that high. It's only 50% since 2009. So it's actually one of the weaker months if you look at seasonality alone.
It seems to be running into some former lows too, right? If you look at the chart. And so,
if you go back on a
yearly or something like that.
Yeah, so this is the monthly chart. So if we went to like something like the weekly, and this is what I would do. I just measure volume weighted average price from this March low. And, you know, it is holding that VWAP for now. So that'd be another thing I'm kind of looking at. But, you know, you can't take seasonality as, you know, too much of a, you know, end all be all, especially when you have a 50% win rate. It's pretty much just a flip of the coin. But when you do have these really high win rates, like 80, 90, 100%, that's when seasonality does have a little more weight to it. If we hold above this anchored VWAP from the March lows around 605, you know, that it seems like things are on the up and up for this one.
Sure. This next one's another software deal, IS. It deals with app monetization. So monetizing your app, this is what they use. And I think it's been going pretty good.
Yeah. So I kind of, the first thing that sticks out to me is kind of your this kind of consolidation where you've got, you know, a pretty clear head. The shoulders aren't as defined here. You've got a little bit of a right shoulder here. This left shoulder is barely a shoulder, but you kind of do have that kind of very defined head where you've got capitulation and then you kind of pull right back up. You know, this is seems like to be more of a recent IPO, at least this year. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of forming an IPO base. The main thing I would want to see on this is just a close above, the IPO highs. And you can't really use seasonality on something that's 10 months. So seasonality wouldn't really come into play here for me. The weekly, you'd want to get above those previous IPO highs around 13, 1350. And then if we look at the daily chart, we do have a little bit of a flag here. So this is where I'd kind of bring in the volume by price and anchor it from this pivot here. So I would move it to here and I'd measure what the volume looks like since here. You can see that volume is definitely supporting price over the last couple candles. So this actually looks pretty good. Same thing. We've got this wick. So immediately I'm going to go in and I'm going to look at the raindrop and see, okay, what was going on within this wick? It was a green candle. It's a red raindrop. So, you know, something to consider. Most of the volume during the second half of the day was at a low of the day here. So, you know, sellers definitely in control on this one into the end of the day. But all in all, you know, it would be hard for me to really take this trade until it breaks out of that IPO base.
They have an interesting business. You know, monetization of the app is obviously going to be a good business if they have something cooking, you know?
Yep, for sure.
People want to do that. Next one up is Litecoin, and LTCN is Litecoin.
Litecoin, this thing, people who are holding Litecoin are probably not incredibly happy with the price right now as Ethereum and Bitcoin are kind of pretty much hitting new highs. Litecoin is chopped around so much, I would just pull this out to a monthly chart and kind of look at what's going on here. So the first thing that I'd look at is I look at pretty much since we capitulated back in COVID, you know, where is a majority of the volume holding? And you can see volume is supporting price here. And honestly, Litecoin is pretty much known for being one of the last cryptos to move. Litecoin kind of had its run as everything else topped out back in April. And so you can see here that we do have some volume supporting price here. Going into the end of the year, you've got about a 60% win rate, and we don't have much more data past 2016. So you're looking back about 5 years for Litecoin. 60% win rate, you know, it's one of those ones where it's like, yeah, okay, it's a little higher than above the 50% range, but seasonality isn't doing a ton for me right here. But the fact that we do have price above this this aggregation of volume is one thing. But then on top of that, all cryptos are running, so I'd expect this one to likely do the same. And I mean, if you zoom out,
Quick question, Jake, for people that are not familiar with the situation, can you, or if you can answer this question, can you explain why it went from like 450 down to like, such a little bit? Is it one of the coins that people just don't want, or?
So I'm definitely by no means a crypto expert. I've been following the price of Litecoin. I was following it quite a bit here. I think it's just one of those things that a lot of people will trade Litecoin as a proxy or a laggard for crypto. But then when it comes down to actually having intrinsic value, I just don't think a lot of people in the crypto space believe it's got the same intrinsic value as Ethereum or Bitcoin. And that's why it's got some of these crazy moves. Bitcoin and Ethereum generally will not move like this crazy where it goes from 400 to 100, drop 75% in 2 months. So I think that's the main thing, is it's not really looked at as that valuable in the crypto space.
It's kind of like must have something 2.0. To do with the scarcity or the usage or something. Like with Ethereum, they've got obviously uses there, and obviously you got a limited supply on the Bitcoin. So
I mean, Litecoin has limited supply as well, but it's just it doesn't have a lot of projects that actually utilize it. And it's funny because I live in Denver, and there's a ton of dispensaries in Denver. And one time I was at a dispensary, and they took my card, and I paid with my card, and I was like, how do you guys actually get the money out? Like, how are you making the transaction? They're like, we actually convert it to Litecoin and then back to the dollar. And that was interesting to me, because that's the only time I've actually seen a cryptocurrency being used with some type of utility. So it's always interesting to me that a lot of these crypto maxis, or really big evangelists of crypto, don't really see the value in it, at least Litecoin, because for whatever reason, maybe some of these projects aren't as prominent. But Litecoin's the only crypto I've actually used in real life as like a way to reduce an inefficiency in some type of industry.
Yeah, the volume today on it was like 239,000 shares versus almost 6 million and 15 million in Ethereum and Bitcoin. So certainly it doesn't have the action of the other.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Well, let's get cooking on Palantir. We all know Palantir's got all the data you want and the government contracts they've got. And they bought $50 million worth of gold. And
which I'm still confused by. But definitely. This is a classic case study on the volume shelf. So kind of similar to what we were looking at before, where you want to measure volume and volume weighted average price from the most recent reversal and trend, kind of the change in the status quo. So in this case, I'm just really measuring the volume and the volume weighted average price from this previous swing high. And you'll see here today, the price could not get above this this volume weighted average price. But you can also see that there's a lot of volume aggregating here, which, anytime you've got a decently strong candle like this on a volume shelf, and this was also kind of right on your point of control, this is kind of a recipe for what I like to call kind of a launch. So a lot of the time, this volume shelf will act as a launch pad for price. It kind of creates a base for the price to move up off of. So not really shocked to see a nice bounce here today, but also not shocked to see it get rejected at this VWAP for now. But if you look at the weekly chart, the weekly candle, it's looking okay, but it's still only Tuesday. There's not a ton of time left, but you do kind of have a decent candle from last week that's still we're continuing up off of. The main thing that I don't like about Palantir is if you go since the weekly candle and you go back since the IPO, you'll see here that there is a ton of supply here. So anytime that the price is below these volume nodes, this is going to act as supply. Because imagine that you bought Palantir at 25, 50, 26 bucks. You're currently holding at a loss. So as the price gets back up to where you broke even, or where you will break even, a lot of people will take some off the table. They're like, this is an opportunity cost problem. The market's ripping and Palantir can't even get above my break-even price. I'm going to take my money and put it somewhere mm-hmm. else.
That makes
enough
sense.
People do that. Yeah. It becomes a supply zone, because you've got people kind of taking their money out, and whether that's maybe 50% of their position or the whole position, that becomes an issue, at least short term. Now, if the price can get above this area, this is what I'm going to call kind of break-even demand, because then all of these shares are now holding pretty much at break-even, and it will act as kind of a shelf, a launch pad for price to move up. So a lot of the time, you'll see the price break through, pull back, retest the shelf, and then kind of that will be its launch. But for now, I don't see this one really having any type of big move. It wouldn't be one that I would take advantage of when the market's so hot like it is.
Can you put the spies up there, SPY, and look at the volume? And do we see any indication of anything?
For SPY, we're above it. So that's kind of exactly what you want to see. You want to see the price above these levels. So if we measure from the COVID low, we're above above it. So that's kind of your ideal setup here. And you'll notice here that for about 3 weeks, this acted as a supply zone. We were kind of digesting that supply. And then finally, once you break above it, that's when it becomes kind of a launch pad, if you will.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Good information. The next guy up is DocuSign, which looks like it's trying to get going. It's above 270. And it'd be interesting to see what you see there, because it looks like it's got some momentum now.
Yeah, let me pull up the daily, see what's going on here. So kind of looks similar to Palantir. So same thing. I would measure volume since this previous high. And, you know, pretty textbook. We pretty much gapped up right into that supply zone today. So you gapped up into a lot of where these shares are back to break even. And then if you look at the volume weighted average price from this high, it rejected right at that VWAP as well. So this is almost kind of a spitting image of Palantir's price action today. And you would really need to get above this swing high anchored VWAP to get started. But if you did, you know, this is kind of my ideal situation here. Pull back, bounce from there. Yeah. Maybe not that drastic, but you know, some type of bounce where you bounce back off of it after breaking out.
Yeah, definitely 285 it could go to pretty easily.
Yep.
All right, next guy up is FUV, which is a electric vehicle, kind of a sports vehicle, three-wheel, two-seater, made in Eugene, Oregon, as opposed to Shanghai, China.
Interesting. Reminds me a little bit of Solo, which is also, I think a Canadian company, but same type of thing. Pretty interesting looking car, but on the EV side of things. So this is kind of a cool case study. So we're on the daily here. The reason why I wouldn't anchor from, let's say, this high or this high here, we could, but there's just not enough price history here. You can see that, yes, we do have a lot of shares here that are aggregated since this high. But a lot of the time, if we've got this type of move, I want to kind of measure volume from this reversal back in August. And you'll see something pretty interesting here. You'll see that kind of the same thing that we just talked about on one of those other names. You have this kind of vacuum up here. You don't have a lot of liquidity above until you get to around 1132. So you don't have a lot of people that are holding at a loss until you get back up to that 1125, 1140 area. So what can happen is the price can move very quickly through these areas. And if it did kind of get through this 1075 area, you know, this can move pretty quick up to around 1130, 1145 above until you kind of hit that next area of supply. So that would be kind of the levels that I'm watching here. But if you anchor volume weighted average price from this previous high, you'd really want to get through around 1090, which has been historically since, you know, late September. This has been an area where price has been rejected at multiple times. And so you'd really want to get above that before you get too excited on this one.
Yeah, it had a big burst there early in the year, up to over $35. Then whatever they were doing wasn't working very well. So it came all the way back down to a low level. So yeah,
I was going to say, is this a SPAC? But I don't think it is. I think this is just a stock. Yeah. No, it definitely participated in that that early year run. And then lost almost every bit of its gains. So EVs are starting to become hot again. I'm actually pretty bullish on the EV sector. I think a lot of the infrastructure bill is kind of around new types of technology. So I'm really liking solar. I'm liking electric vehicles. I'm liking charging stations because I think that's definitely going to be a hot topic in the coming years.
Yeah, that NIO I jumped on a couple of weeks back and it's been doing great.
Yeah, NIO, Tesla. You've seen Plug Power really have a bounce in the last couple of weeks. So I think that's going to continue.
All right, let's hit ARRY, another technology outfit. And again, another one that came out last year. And obviously everybody who owned it on the offering got rid of it. And it went all the way down under 15. Now it's trying to get its boat legs again and fill that gap, I guess. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks good, honestly. I mean, let's see. You know, if we just measure the price from this point, the volume from this point, you're kind of breaking out of this consolidation. Yeah. So, you know, I would just kind of look at this previous area here, and then we kind of have this this area here. So you kind of had a little bit of a flag forming, broke out over the last 2 weeks. And, you know, on the weekly side, it looks very strong. You've pretty much got an outside bar for this week already, looking at this previous week's range. But then if you go back on the daily, you know, same thing. I mean, if you measure the volume by price from this point here, You've got quite a bit of volume supporting the price here. And it's really hard sometimes to use the volume by price when you you only have 8 or 9 days. So I would probably even pull it back to here. And, you know, same thing though. This thing has literally been trading in this range for a while. So we already know that most of the volume is likely going to show up here. But you can see that we're above this volume shelf. We do have a wick here. So that's always something you want to look at. Immediately turn on the raindrop chart. And you actually have quite a bit of volume at the top of the range here. So to me, that tells me that there are buyers willing to absorb supply near the top of the range because you kind of have that bulge of volume here. Now, one thing to keep in mind is I like to use raindrops, especially around these previous resistance zones. So if we were to just draw a horizontal resistance line here, you'll see that you do have a little bit of that volume actually above the resistance line, which shows that there's some conviction by buyers above resistance. So this one's actually looking really strong right now. So this could definitely be one that you could see a potential gap fill. So, you know, just turn on the gap snake and you'll see, that you got a pretty big gap here up to around $23 on this one.
Now, Jake, just to clear up some things, when we're looking at this volume like you're doing now, and let's say it starts getting above, the 21 mark or whatever. Yeah, say 21. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly above all the volume lines there.
Yep.
Would you have a get out point using like 1885 or something like that where the volume was big? Or, you know, how would you use this to actually facilitate a trade?
Yep. So, I mean, this would be right here. This would be kind of my area to take a trade around here. Now, to get out or to look at a level of interest, that's when you'd want to use a VWAP from a previous high. So in this case, you know, I'd probably look at this previous high from January, look at the VWAP, and that would kind of be my area to get above. Now, if it did get above that, you know, generally, if you're this far into a gap, you're probably going to fill the gap. So, you know, that would be at least my first target. And I'm someone who looks at a target, and if the price continues to look strong, I'm probably not going to, you know, get out.
Step maybe in front maybe of it. Put a
trailing stop in or something. But
yeah,
my main level that we'd need to get above is around 2150, which is that previous January high volume weighted average price, which we have not gotten above in literally 10 months. So that would
combine the volume information with other technical indicators before you come to conclusions?
Yeah, for sure. I'm using multiple variables. There's not, exactly. There's not kind of one end all be all for me, at least.
Yeah. No, it's like a soup. You got to have different ingredients, right?
Yep, exactly.
All right. Tesla, TSLA on fire lately. And valuation is of no concern. Let's just go.
Yeah. Very. I think a lot of this is people thinking that Tesla is going to be a technology. It is a technology company. They do have a lot of technology other than the cars. But yeah, it is hard to kind of justify the valuation, if you're looking at it simply as a car company. But I think a lot of people are pricing in a lot of other things that Tesla is kind of getting into. And I think, you know, and this sounds crazy maybe, but, you know, I think a lot of people invest in Tesla because some of their private companies aren't investable. You know, you can't publicly invest in SpaceX. So people say, oh, well, I can't do that. I'll just buy Tesla because it's, you know, who knows, maybe Elon Musk is going to pull like a Solar City type of thing with SpaceX and Tesla. So I think that's why people still continue to buy this. And a lot of it is you've kind of got the same type of investors in Tesla as you do in Bitcoin. They will not sell their shares at all.
Saying that Tesla has a lot of companies similar to the way Google and Facebook does with Instagram and YouTube, and that you can't buy into those separate entities, so people buy that stock to get into those entities, that kind of a thing?
Yeah, that's kind of my mindset around it.
Okay, no, it's a better explanation than luck, you know what I mean? I mean, people wonder how it keeps going and going and going. And it has very, very large investors in there. I mean, these Vanguard funds and these Fidelity funds and all these people, I mean, they all have a tremendous amount of shares.
Mm-hmm.
So people like to say, oh, the public loves Tesla and they're never going to sell. Hey, listen, forget about the public. There are massive institutions that are holding massive amounts of this stock. And I don't think they're buying it just because they're gambling, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think they've done research like you're talking about. They've done research and they probably see behind the hood that they've got some technology, and they got companies that have technology. So there's really a mushroom effect, isn't there?
Yep, 100%. And you know, and I saw somebody very, very bearish on Tesla in 2018 when this thing was at $250 pre-split. And you know, they just couldn't look. And this was a pretty prominent fund manager that was making this presentation, and he just couldn't look past that Tesla wasn't just a car company. And I think a lot of people made that mistake as well. You also had a lot of people shorting Tesla forever, and so that only adds fuel to the fire. But on top of that, you know, a lot of people forget that prices can move simply as a function of, you know, the supply and demand curves. You don't necessarily have to have the price, you don't have to have a ton of buyers to step in for the price to keep going up. You can just have people stop selling. And if you don't have a lot of people selling, then the price has to continue to increase in order to find sellers. And I think that's part of it too. I mean, look at this. You can see Tesla's been dropping in volume pretty much since this run. Now, this volume has been at higher prices, but people will say, well, how is that possible? How can the price continue to move up and the volume go down? Well, you just have people not selling. You have less
or amount sure, of supply. You have a short covering, which is just a liquidation.
Yep. And you know, that's what a lot of people can't wrap their heads around is, you know, prices can move not because of one side. Prices can move up not because there's got to be an increase in demand. It can move up because there's no sellers. And that's, I think that's partially what happens with Tesla a lot of the time.
Okay. Well, here's another one up there. DVAX, that's another technology firm. And it definitely looks like it's trying to break out above the 1718 area. And if it does, it could get going, huh?
Yeah, I used to trade this one back in the day. I haven't traded in a while, but yeah, same thing here. You know, if we look back at this pivot, you could look at multiple pivots here. You could even go back to the May lows and measure the volume there. You'll see that a majority of volume is aggregating right at this current level. And for now, you know, we do have a little bit of supply here. Anytime, as I mentioned, the price is below these shares, it's going to act as supply. Once we get above it, that's when things get interesting. Now, we've been doing this the whole time. Might as well keep doing it. We've got a wick. We want to see what was going on within this wick. Was there actually volume that was occurring within this wick today? And if we turn on the raindrop, you will see that there's actually a decent amount of volume aggregating within that wick. So to me, that tells me buyers were very aggressive, pushing the price up, likely, you know, with market orders. And then as those aggressive buyers and that aggressive demand pulled back into the close, the price was able to drop, not because a bunch of sellers came in, but because that those buyers were done buying and the demand curve was able to shift back rather than just looking at it as a function of sellers coming in. So very strong setup here for DVAX. I definitely like this one going into the rest of the week.
Sure. Well, you've got a lot of very, very interesting technology, approaches and data that you use. Very unique. And I think it'd be very worthwhile for everybody to make sure they get a hold of you. And if you have any special offers now, could you just remind everybody how to get a hold of you, Jake? And also, if you have a special offer, maybe offer it now, because again, the stuff that you're doing, I haven't seen done with other people. So that's a very, very unique approach. So how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. So they can follow me on Twitter. So @TrendSpider_J is my personal account. We also have the TrendSpider account @TrendSpider, all one word. And if you guys do want to check this out, we have a free trial, so you can check out all of these different things. And we do have a customer success team that will actually walk you through the platform and answer any questions you have while you're on trial. And you can use TME25 to get 25% off any plan. We have monthly and we have annual plans. And so you can take advantage of either one of those in any plan that we have. So we've got three different plans, and each one of them kind of has different limitations on what you can use on the platform. So our middle plan is definitely our most popular one. So you can check that out just by going to trendspider.com and go to the pricing tab, and you can see all of the different plans, what those plans have to offer. And you can use that TME25. So Tom, Michael,
Edward,
Eternity 25. I was like, what did I use for E?
It's been a long day, right?
Yeah, use TME25 for that coupon code once you decide if you want to try it out. And yeah, there's a ton of unique things. I've been participating in the market. I'm by no means the best trader out there or anything like that, but I do like to teach new ways of looking at the markets and how I can get an edge using this. And there's a lot of different ways that we've highlighted in today's video, but also other videos that we have on YouTube. So we do have the technical analysis series. We've got the weekend updates that we do on YouTube. So just type in TrendSpider weekend update. You'll be be able to see those. TrendSpider technical analysis series, you'll be able to see those. So there's a lot of resources that you can check out before you even, you know, start a trial as well.
Sounds great. And thank you very much for being here, Jake, because again, I learned an awful lot because this stuff is very, very special and unique. So that's great. Optionprofessor.com. We do have a weekly newsletter we send out free of charge. So go over the website, put your email in, and you can get that every week. Right now, I'm going to turn it back to David. Thanks to everybody for being here. And again, Jake, thanks a lot for coming as well.
Hey, thank you. It was great chatting.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. And hopefully everybody has a great rest of the week.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for being here. So like I said at the beginning, Jake's been on a bunch of our other events, but hasn't been on AYT yet. And so happy to have him here today for this. So just a reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube or your favorite podcast app to get updates on shows and events as I post them. Or you can just go to timingresearch.com. And find all the events there, including this one, as soon as I can get it posted. So I just want to thank my guests again for today, Jake Wojcik of TrendSpider.com and The Option Professor of OptionProfessor.com. So thanks, everyone.
Hey, thank you. We'll see you next time.